Welcome to the Productivity Show, the Asian Efficiency Podcast dedicated to helping you make the most of your time, energy, and attention. My name is Tan Pham. I'm the founder and CEO of Asian Efficiency. And today's episode is going to be a little different. Mike Schmitz will be leaving Asian Efficiency and the Productivity Show, and he's going to be doing other big and exciting things, which we'll talk about later. I thought it would be great to have Mike share his lessons and experiences he learned over the years that would benefit others just like you. You can find links to everything that we share in the show notes by going to theproductivityshow.com/224. And now, on with the show. Alrighty, today with me I have Brooks Duncan. Hey Brooks, how's it going?
Excellent, how are you?
I'm doing great today. And we actually have a very special quote-unquote guest today, the guest of honor today, which is Mike Schmitz. Hey Mike, how are you doing today?
Doing well. How's it going, guys?
Mike, I know you're leaving Asian Efficiency. I know you're leaving the Productivity Show, and you're going to be doing bigger and better things outside of Asian Efficiency. And it's a little bit sad in the sense that you're not part of the team, but we're also excited for you, what's coming up next. And I thought we would dedicate today's show to you, kind of like talk about what you've learned over the years working at AE, some of the things that you would share and with others, and kind of share what you believe has been impactful for you that might benefit others. And so I want to dedicate the show all about you. And Brooks is here with us, and so I'm happy all three of us are here today to kind of talk and celebrate you here today. But yeah, Brooks, where do you want to take things to?
Well, one thing I've always been kind of curious about, and I've sort of heard the story, but I don't think I've heard the entire story. So I think others might be interested who are kind of interested in following their own path. But I'm interested, how did Mike get connected to Asian Efficiency? Like, how did you even find the site? And how did you get connected with the team? And then how did you actually turn that into, I assume you were like a reader first and a customer, but how did you leverage that into working for that, for AE, and turn it into a job, basically?
Yeah. I forget which product I had purchased first. It was either Better Sleep or OmniFocus Premium Posts. I bought both of those around the same time. And I bought them and got introduced to Asian Efficiency via my brother. And I was just looking for different things which would help me squeeze out a little bit more time in my day. I was having trouble keeping up with the demands of work while I was working in the office with the family business. So just trying to become a little bit more efficient, a little bit more optimized. And once I discovered simple things like writing down a to-do list and not checking your email all the time, like that really had a profound effect on me. But I had been a customer for quite a while, and I had been learning as much as I could about productivity through different books that I read and reading the site and stuff like that. And I got the idea that I was going to write a book of my own, which since then I've self-published. It's called Thou Shalt Hustle. And if you buy it now, I'm actually kind of ashamed of it because I've gotten so much better as a writer. I want to go back and update that at some point. But anyways, that was the thing. The process of writing that book is the thing that got me connected with Asian Efficiency. Because I had no idea, and I've told this story on webinars and stuff like that in the past, so I'll keep this part kind of short, but I had no idea how to write a book, just believed that I had a message. I was connecting these things that I was learning in the productivity space, lining them up with what I was learning as I was going through Bible college. I was actually teaching a Bible college class on personal management when stuff really got serious for me, and I felt like I really need to write this book, but I had no idea how to write a book. Because I'm really smart, I decided I better learn how to write. So I just started implementing what I had learned from the Productivity Blueprint, I think, getting up at 5 a.m. and doing your most important task right away, eating your frog. And I decided I was going to write for an hour every day before I went into the office. And I started a blog just so I could publish something when I was done. Didn't really think it was going to be any good. Just wanted some sort of accountability. And I did that for a period of about 2 weeks. And then I noticed on Twitter, because I was following Asian Efficiency, that they were hiring. So I reached out, not about a job, but about an opportunity to guest post. And Tan, I think you were the one who replied. Basically, you said, we don't really do that, but if you have anything, send it my way. So I sent over the blog that I had just started like 2 weeks earlier, and we had a call, and my recollection of that call was, hey, your writing's pretty good. We can tell you've read a lot of the same books. You've got a lot of the same mindsets. We want to give this a shot. And so I started writing a couple of posts that turned into working on OmniFocus Premium Post, the version 2 update that ended up being a part-time job and eventually a full-time job. And every step along the way, it was basically, I just really enjoy this work that I'm doing. I really enjoy helping people reach their full potential. And so when the opportunity came to do it on a larger scale, it was like, yeah, of course.
When you had started sort of contributing at the beginning, were you thinking to yourself, oh, was it kind of a goal? Like, if I could join these guys full time, that would be amazing. Or was it really just like an incremental thing? Like, you weren't thinking ahead that far. It was just kind of little bit by bit.
I wasn't thinking ahead quite that far. I don't know. Maybe I should have been, but at the time I was just really enjoying what I was doing on the side. In fact, initially, I think, Tan, you had mentioned to me, you know, you want to come join the team full time. And I was not at the point yet where I was ready to walk away from what I was doing with the family business. And so I think I turned you down initially. But over time, you kind of painted this picture of what it was like to work for Asian Efficiency, the whole idea being remote, having control of your own schedule. And for where I was with being a parent of, I think, 4 kids at the time, I really wanted that flexibility. And so it got to the point where I recognized that was the thing that was the most important to me. And Asian Efficiency was going to let me do what I loved, and they were going to give me the flexibility in order to be there for my family, be able to take the afternoon off and go on a field trip because we homeschool our kids, or work around family vacations and stuff like that. That was really, really appealing to me. And the, you know, it kind of all crystallized in one moment when we were actually on a family vacation at the lake, which is kind of my happy place. I tell this story in the webinars too, but really the defining moment for me was when my wife and I were sitting in the couch in the living room at this lake house and playing with my kids. And she makes this comment like, that's the first time I've seen you smile, like really smile, in months. And that really just hit me like a ton of bricks, because I didn't realize all of the pressure that I was having to deal with in the day-to-day stuff with the family business. I knew that we were developing this stuff and I was coordinating people all over the world who are working on the development of this online product. I knew that sometimes with sales, you know, sometimes things are good, sometimes things are bad. And so I recognized like that just comes with the territory, but I didn't realize the impact that it was having on me until that moment. And so, you know, when I realized that it wasn't just affecting me, it was affecting everybody around me, I recognized something's got to change. When I started working with Asian Efficiency, the work that I did with Asian Efficiency actually evolved quite a bit over the years. I started off as the technical guy with the podcast. Zach was the host. I really thought maybe I could do podcasting, but really had no idea. And it wasn't until Zach left and Tan's like, what do we do? And I'm like, hey, I think I can do this. Let me give it a shot. That I discovered, you know, that was something that I really liked to do. The public speaking thing, even creating videos, all that kind of stuff. That was stuff that I've learned along the way. And I'm really grateful to Asian Efficiency for encouraging me to uncover those things, figure out what my strengths are, and then do those things.
So Tan, just to take it back. So you're deciding you're hiring. You decide you want to get some more writers or whatever. I'm assuming you got a bunch of people responding to you on Twitter and the other places that you posted it. Maybe this would be helpful for other people who are listening. So what was it about what Mike's response that kind of made you take notice and made you want to look into it more versus all the other stuff you were getting? If you remember, it was a while ago, obviously.
Yeah, this has been many, many years ago now. It feels like a decade ago. And I don't know. Like,
it was about 4 years.
Hearing Mike's story, I had a totally different recollection. I met Mike in person in an alleyway, and I held him at gunpoint, and I said, Mike, you need to come work for me. And so that's what ended up happening. No, that's totally not true. No, what ended up happening was I was on Twitter and I noticed that Mike was replying to some of my stuff. And then I saw that he had a blog. And so I thought, oh, let's go check this out. And I remember reading a post about eating your frog. And as everybody knows about me, that's the one thing I always like to do. And so I read Mike's post. I was like, oh, this guy is a really good writer. He can clearly communicate his thoughts and obviously very smart and has very similar books. And then, from there, it was just a little bit of a blur of how things went. But I just remember that Mike was contributing to the blog on a consistent basis and then helping out with the OmniFocus product, like he said. And from there, it was just, okay, we need to get Mike on board ASAP. And I don't remember being rejected. Maybe that happened. I don't remember. But
it wasn't a formal rejection, but we kind of did the dance for a while where it's like, well, maybe would you be interested in maybe kind of working more? And I'm like, well, I don't know, maybe. And I'm like, that whole thing, that's what I remember anyways. It wasn't like a formal offer, like, hey, make a decision. We want you full time. But it took a little bit of time for me to get to the point where I was ready to quote unquote, make the leap.
You were basically playing hard to get. That's what it was.
I guess. I didn't mean to.
So yeah, that's super fun for me to kind of recollect because one, you know, you've impacted Asian efficiency in so many different ways. And it's just funny how finding people through Twitter or just getting connected that way is how things have happened nowadays. And a lot of people haven't really even seen behind the scenes all the things that you've done. You know, like you've been responsible for a big course like Escape Your Email or Finisher's Fastlane. You've been responsible for the podcast and growing that even further to the next level. But what are some of the impacts that Asian efficiency has made on you, Mike?
Yeah, there's quite a few. I'll try to keep this kind of short. One of the big things that I learned was that you win and lose as a team, which is the kind of thing that you hear all the time. Probably every company or organization would confess that they win and lose as a team. But there was one moment that really crystallized this for me and really helped me understand this when we were just launching the podcast. So as I mentioned, I was responsible for a lot of the technical stuff. And there was a point when we were in the first 20 episodes, I believe, where an episode got published before it was done. So when you publish a WordPress post and it's got a podcast episode attached to it, it instantly goes to everybody's podcatcher, and the episode was not finished yet. So everybody got this unedited, junky version of this episode. And it was a big deal to me. I was freaking out trying to figure out how this happened. And I remember distinctly, we had a meeting to talk about it. And you basically asked, how do we make sure this doesn't happen again? And I kept trying to figure out, well, who's the one who pushed the button? I didn't do it, you know? And you're like, no, it doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. Just how do we make sure that this doesn't happen again? Which I thought was really cool because, and then it kind of shifted my thinking too, to realize that it doesn't matter who screwed up. That only matters if you want to apply accountability, like a lot of people think of accountability as assigning blame for something. But that's different than taking responsibility for something, because if you take responsibility for something, you're making sure that you get the desired outcome. And if you win and lose as a team, you can take responsibility for the outcome and you don't have to throw the other guy under the bus. So that was definitely a big lesson learned. Another thing that I learned, and I've got a whole bunch of them here, so I'll just throw out a couple. I recognize through working with Asian deficiency that differences are strengths. I remember taking, was it the wealth dynamics test? Is that the one that everybody takes at the beginning?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. And I remember you saying, basically you wanted people in all the different boxes. So people who had different personality traits, different strengths. And at first I thought that was kind of weird because it would be hard for somebody like me, and I forget what mine was because I haven't looked at it in quite a while, to work with somebody like Zach. And turns out that actually was pretty true. It was difficult for me to work with Zach. But once we figured out how to work together, the end result was much better because we approached the same problem totally differently. And when you get the different perspectives that way, then the end product as a team or an organization is a lot better. And another version of that, I would argue, would be like the Colby. So getting people who have different strengths according to the Colby assessment, that can be beneficial to an organization as well. It helps break the organization or the team out of that groupthink where everybody approaches the problems through the same lens. If you do that, you may find a solution, but a lot of times it's not the best solution.
Tan, if I can just jump in, as the hirer, how do you walk that line between looking at somebody's score and or you know there's how they are and knowing, oh, this person is a good addition because they approach things differently than the people we have? How do you kind of follow that line between that and this person won't interface properly with what we have, you know, because theirs is different? Like, is there a line there or how do you kind of know if you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I totally screwed it up in the first couple of years. I'm happy to admit that because I basically hired the first couple of people to be very similar to me because I thought, oh, you know, if they're very similar to me, then we're going to be thinking the same way and we're going to produce better stuff because of that. And this is a very typical approach that a lot of people have who start businesses. And you just naturally start to attract people that are very similar to you because it just, in your head, it makes thinking easier. It just makes the work easier. It just makes collaboration easier. And to a certain extent, that is true because if everybody on the team is, for example, a systems thinker, you'll speak the same language, you'll work the same way. You're probably going to be very process-driven, which is all great. But then you miss other things like creativity and flexibility and things like that. And so the first couple of years, I actually mishired in many ways. And I started to become more conscious just by studying and just reading about building teams and building organizations that actually you want the opposite. You want to have a wide range of people on your team or in your organization because everybody brings a different input, idea, insight to whatever outcome that we're shooting for, as Mike mentions. And so that's why we start taking these tests like wealth dynamics. That's why we have Colby tests. And one of the things I wish I knew earlier on was in Colby, at least you can actually tell if two people are going to have friction working together when their scores are, when there's a delta of 4 or more. So if somebody, let's say, is a 9 in fact finding and then the other person is like a 2, that's a delta of 7. Anytime it's 4 or more, there's a potential for a lot of friction, right? So that actually happens to be the case between Mike and Zach at that time, because I believe Zach was like a 9 in quick start and Mike was like a 3 or something.
Yep.
So there's a 6 delta there. So there's a lot of friction there. And until two people know how to work together and kind of understand and appreciate the differences as well, that's when we can create something magical. But if people don't know about that, then it can be really frustrating.
Yeah, and that kind of goes back to the episode that I recorded with David Colby, TPS 197. He talked about there really isn't a high and a low to something like the Colby test because there's no right or wrong answers. There's no right or wrong outcome. This is just your cognitive preferences, I think is how he phrased it. So this is the way that you're wired. You know, my approach to the problem is not the right way any more than Zach's approach to the problem was the right way. But it's reconciling the different approaches and being able to compromise that's where the magic happens.
Yeah, and we talk a lot about Colby, and you did an episode with him, like you said, Mike, in episode 197. So we'll make sure to link to that in the show notes as well. But what are some other things, Mike, that you wanted to share?
Well, some of the other lessons that I've learned, one of the most obvious lessons when I first started working with Asian Deficiency was the power of systems. I put in my little note here, systems for the win, because everything is documented. I remember before I joined the team full time, there was a challenge for who could write the most SOPs in a month, and the winner got an Apple Watch when it was just launched. And that kind of blew my mind. Like, people spend time updating this stuff. But then once I joined the team full time, I recognize, oh, yeah, because you spend a little bit of time updating these things, anybody can jump in and do these things. You don't have to be the person with the knowledge in a particular domain. If you create the SOP the right way, that's really the goal, is that anybody can look at this and anybody can do what you were doing. I don't think cross-functional is necessarily the right term, but we talked about this in TPS 189 when I had the Scrum Master Judah Smith on, where people are able to jump in and do different tasks and things aren't siloed because one person contains all of the information that's needed to get something done. So that was a big thing. Another thing that I really appreciate about Asian Efficiency is the emphasis on personal development and basically never stop learning. So one of the things I really enjoyed about Asian Efficiency was that I could expense books to the company. And so I did that. I bought several books every month. And I honestly can say I've read like 95% of them. There were a couple of them. Like I remember Confessions of a Pricing Man, Brooks, you recommended, and I just couldn't get into that one. But for the most part, you know, I was like, they're paying me to read this stuff. This is awesome. And it was great because it gave me more dots to connect when I would do podcast episodes or create blog content or even some of the courses. I definitely see like how it was benefiting the company that way. But I really appreciated that. And I want to call that out because I think that that's a really important thing. A lot of companies and organizations will say they believe in investing in their people, but are they really, I guess if they really believe in it, they're going to put some money behind it. And so that was one of the things that really stood out to me. Not just the books either. Like Asian Efficiency sent me to the Entree Leadership Summit in May. And that was amazing. You know, I got to hear Seth Godin and Donald Miller. That's actually where I heard about StoryBrand. And then I came back and we started running with it internally. So yeah, never stop learning. Invest in people. One of the things I learned from you, Tan, is the power of thinking time. We've recorded a podcast episode on that, TPS 162. There's a course in the dojo, which is great. You give a whole bunch of prompts and questions that people can use. That's one of the things that I've learned pertaining to thinking time, but really just in general, is when you're faced with a problem and you're trying to find the right solution, it really doesn't need to be that complicated. You just need to ask the right questions. When you ask the right questions, a lot of times the right solution becomes crystal clear.
Yeah, that's so true. And I'm glad that you started to implement some of this stuff, because obviously it became very obvious in terms of, at least from my point of view, internally within the company, how we were doing things for the dojo and then for the podcast and then for the blog and all the systems that we needed to create around that. And it was very obvious that you were implementing like the thinking time process behind it, and you were coming up with all these ideas and solutions. And I think one of the most valuable things about you reading so much on a monthly basis, and I was like, oh, Mike is buying books. Okay, I'm happy to pay for this. Like, let's expense it. Because there's something about knowledge where once it starts to accumulate and you have all these nuggets of info and wisdom from all these different teachers, and at some point, especially when you start creating, for example, podcast episodes or courses or videos or even blog posts, it starts to synthesize in one thought. And the quality of thought is usually a lot higher when you've read a lot of books or when you've learned a lot. And so I think, from my point of view, at least as quote unquote the business owner, investing in people that way is one of the best things you can do. And the earlier you start, the bigger the payoff over time, you know? So I was super happy to see you do that. And also for other people to kind of follow your footsteps on that.
Yeah, I'm definitely grateful for that. By the way, one interesting tidbit from that, because I've been doing this now for a couple of years at least, and I'm at the point now where I've read enough books and I have enough dots collected. I've heard enough ideas that when I sit down with a productivity book or a business book, I'm able to judge it through a different lens. It's not like, here's the system. Oh, this must work because what they're saying in these pages makes sense. Like, I'm able to weigh that against the other models and the other ideas from the other books. And it happens kind of subconsciously. It's not like I have to go back into my notes and compare things side by side. But now I'll read something and I'll look at this system that they're proposing. And sometimes something will go off in me and it'll be like, you know, I'm not sure that's 100% true because I've got this other dot from this other book. And so what ends up happening is you meld these things and you end up with something that's new and original. That's something that I picked up from Austin Kleon, the Steal Like an Artist, is that you connect all these dots and then you meld them all together. And when you create something, you're really not creating something out of the blue, completely original. You're just connecting these dots in a way that hasn't been done before. And the more dots that you collect, the easier that is to do.
Brooks, I'm curious to hear from your point of view. What are some of the things that you learned from Mike, or some of the things that you think Mike really impacted in terms of the productivity industry and how people now do things?
Well, my introduction to Mike was actually when I started helping out with some of the products we are creating. And so I always really appreciated how helpful and thorough he is, in the sense that if you're helping him with a task, you will know what needs to be done, what the expectations are. But also, if you have any questions, there's never any, oh, why is this guy asking me this question? It's always like the goal is always whatever needs to be done to make the most excellent result, that is totally fine. And that's one thing I've definitely, I would say, learned and appreciated, is that, I guess you'd say, excellence mindset. So a lot of people will be, you know, oh, whatever is good enough, it is good enough. Like, let's just ship something and put it out the door. And I'm not saying that's our mindset, but a lot of people have that mindset. But Mike is the total opposite. Like, if you're not going to strive for excellence, like, maybe there's certain things you're not able to do now, but you should always be at least trying to get to whatever the absolute best result is. And that is, it's always nice to hear that and be reminded of that when you're kind of in the middle of a firestorm and you're neck deep with tasks. It's like, oh, right. Yeah. Excellence, excellence, excellence. So that's been a big thing for me.
Nice. That's a blessing and a curse, though, because I have trouble sure. getting to the point where it's like, okay, this is good enough. Let's just get it out the door. I always will sure. find something else that I want to change or improve.
Yeah. The other thing is also what you were just saying, Mike, about having all these dots, because you've read so many productivity books, and I'm kind of finding the same thing. When you read these books, you really, first of all, you start realizing that it almost feels like there's only five stories or examples that everybody uses. So when you start reading a lot of books, you know, you kind of start hearing that. But one thing I always really appreciate about Mike is you could be talking about any topic that's tangentially related to productivity, and he'll be like, oh yeah, so-and-so in this book had this really interesting point. And I don't even know how you remember all this stuff, for one thing, but you know, oh yeah, you know, so-and-so did this chapter on this and it's really interesting. And you have this ability to weave all of that together. It's really impressive, actually.
Well, thank you.
So Mike, when it comes to all the podcast episodes that you've recorded, that you've listened to on the Productivity Show, I'm curious to hear, what are some of your favorite episodes? And especially for people who are just joining the Productivity Show and they have a huge backlog, what would you tell them to do next?
Before you start, just so everybody knows, all of these are going to, whatever we talk about is going to be linked to in the show notes, which at this moment, I'm sure Mike is pretty glad he doesn't have to put together to link all these up together. But yeah, so don't worry, this will all be linked in the show notes.
All right, great. A couple of them I've mentioned already. TPS 197 with David Colby. This was one that I got connected with him because I read The Conative Connection. It's the book based on the Colby assessment by Kathy Colby. And David is the CEO of the company, I believe. That interview, I really, really enjoyed. Learned a ton from interviewing him. I guess that one was kind of a surprise because I didn't really, when I was organizing the podcast, maybe it's detrimental, but I didn't like doing the interview stuff. I didn't think I was that great at performing podcast interviews. So I don't know. But that one, I was really happy with how it turned out. TPS 189 with Judith Smith. There's a lot of stuff in there for people who are interested in Scrum. Really happy with how that one turned out. A couple of the internal ones I really liked, TPS 184, which was on intentional attention. TPS 175, the power of gratitude, which I should call out. That's another thing I really, really enjoyed and picked up from Asian Efficiency was this power of gratitude. I love the fact that we do that at the end of every one of our meetings. I'll always remember doing that at the end of the live event in Austin at the Capitol Grill. And just seeing the response from the people that were there, because I think for a lot of them, that was the first time they had experienced something like that. That was just mind blowing. And now my wife and I do that every time we have a family meeting. I applied it to my discipleship group at church. So when we wrap up every Thursday, we have a discipleship meeting. We go around the table and we express gratitude. So that's something that definitely impacted my life for the better. TPS 171 on the growth mindset. That was really a really impactful episode based off of the book Mindset by Carol Dweck. That whole growth mindset versus fixed mindset, that really crystallized the idea for me. Kind of related to that TPS 170, we talked about mind food. And I think, Brooks, you and I did that when we both picked like our 10 favorite books and our 10 favorite podcasts. Yep. So lots of great links in that one. TPS 162, I already mentioned, like thinking time was one of the things that really impacted me. And that was an episode that Tan, you and I had recorded. And then TPS 154 on the impact of journaling. Journaling is the kind of thing, in fact, I think it was episode 2 or 3 when we first covered journaling on the Productivity Show. So I've understood the concept of journaling for a very long time, but it took me years to really get into it. And that episode is based off of the dojo course that Brandon Wentland put together, and he did a great job on that one. There's some different journaling prompts that people can use for that. There's also some research that he did, which really is a powerful idea. I think it originally comes from Dan Sullivan, like the power of the perspective of the gap versus the gain, where you can look at where you are now and get frustrated because you're not where you want to be. And people tend to focus on the gap between where they are and their ideal future. But what journaling does is it lets you see where you were to where you are now. And then you can see the growth and it kind of changes the perspective. In fact, in that episode, I think we shared that journaling can make you up to 25% happier because it changes your perspective like that. So those are a couple of episodes. Honestly, like I've been doing the Productivity Show maybe for like the last 100-something episodes. And as I was going through the list, I'm like, man, how am I going to pick just a handful of these to put in the show notes? I really enjoyed putting together the podcast. And hopefully, you know, that came through. I'm pretty proud of all of the episodes that we've released.
It's kind of like asking who's your favorite kid when you have 5 kids. You
can't exactly. Really. Yeah.
So when it comes to books, Mike, I know you've read a ton of books at this point. When it comes to productivity books or books that are related to productivity, personal growth, self-improvement, what are some of your favorites?
This was another really hard list to nail down. I'm going to try and keep it to 10. My absolute favorite book is The One Thing by Gary Keller and Jay Papasan. There's a really powerful analogy in the beginning about the domino and how it can knock over a domino that's up to 50% larger. And if you carry out that pattern, you know, it doesn't take very long before you're knocking over some pretty huge dominoes. And the productivity angle to that is that you don't have to focus on the big thing that you're trying to do. You just have to focus on that small next action, and then that reduces a lot of the friction from getting started. And once you get started, you build up momentum. That's how you achieve your ideal future. Number 2, So Good They Can't Ignore You by Cal Newport. This book really had a profound impact on me because it showed me that it doesn't matter where you're at right now. If you want to develop a skill, if you really want to become really good at something, you can do that. And if you really want to make a name for yourself in whatever area, that's the way to do it, is not try to implement all the marketing hacks or tricks or whatever. Just become so good they can't ignore you. I think I tell that story in the focus presentation that we do. Another one that I recently read but was awesome was Atomic Habits. And I forgot to write down the episode number, but I just interviewed James Clear for this book. This book is amazing. It's 10 times better than The Power of Habit by Charles Duhigg. If you like that idea and that model, James expounds on it, and it's a really thought-provoking book. One of the things that I really got from that was every time you do something, let's say you want to create a habit, a good habit, or you want to stop doing a bad habit, every time you take the desired action or stop taking the undesired action, you're casting a vote for the type of person that you want to become. And if you cast enough votes, eventually you'll become that person. Essentialism by Greg McKeown is a great book. Eat That Frog, we kind of talked about that already, by Brian Tracy. That's one of the first productivity books I read and had a really big impact on me. The Five Dysfunctions of a Team. This is something that you made me read, Tan, when I joined the Asian Efficiency team, and I loved it. This book is really great by Patrick Lencioni. It's kind of a leadership fable, but what it highlights is the toxic culture in a lot of organizations when they want to discuss things. This is what made the differences that we talked about, like the Kolbe assessment or the wealth dynamics. This is what makes it work, is this basis of trust, which is not as simple as saying, oh, yes, I trust you. So the Five Dysfunctions, there's this whole pyramid. And that's a really good book. Mindset by Carol Dweck, I talked about. Hyperfocus by Chris Bailey. Again, just interviewed him, and I forgot to put this one in my list of podcast episodes too. But Chris Bailey's a really smart dude. And that book is kind of like Deep Work by Cal Newport, which is another great book, but it's a lot more approachable, I think. Flow by Mihai, as some people pronounce it. This is one of those things that you see, Brooks, I think you were mentioning, like some of the books that you read in the productivity space, they share the same stories. Well, it's kind of a requirement that if you're going to do a book on focus, that it references Mihaly's research. And yep. Then I'll just stop here. You know, Love is the Killer App by Tim Sanders. This is another really good book. Tim Sanders is the guy who was the COO, I think, or CTO maybe, for Yahoo when Mark Cuban owned it. He's a writer and a speaker now. And a basic idea with this book is that success is not a limited resource. Just because somebody else is successful doesn't mean there's less success for you. And so I really think that's a powerful idea in the business space. Any sort of business, really, like you don't have to put people down in order to succeed.
Just for the record, the James Clear episode is TPS 217 and the Chris Bailey Hyperfocus episode is TPS 213. So just thought I'd throw that in there. And I'm about three quarters of the way through Atomic Habits, and I agree, it's an excellent book.
Awesome.
Yeah, and if you have the show notes number or you have the episode number, you can actually go to theproductivityshow.com/number, insert your favorite number, for example, 212, and then you will go directly to the episode as well. So if you have a list of your favorite episodes listed here, you can immediately go to that, and it's super easy. So Mike, if you had to go back in time, and this is something I'm very curious about because I ask most people that I meet in person, whether it's online or face-to-face or even on this podcast today here, if you had to go back in time and you would look at your younger self, knowing what you know now, knowing that younger version Mike wanted to become more productive, increase his productivity, knowing what you know now, what would you tell yourself?
Number one, I would say, don't discount what you're capable of. So I think it was about a year ago, the three of us were at dinner and you kind of caught me off guard, Tan, when you asked me, what's the difference between Mike today and Mike last year? And I had trouble answering the question, but you answered it for me and you said, I can see you have way more confidence. I've kind of always struggled with that. And I think that younger me would have this view like, well, I want to write this book. I want to create this course. I want to build this business, whatever. But who am I to do this? Like, I can't do this. And I would go back and tell them, yes, you can. You just have to do the right things over and over until you develop the skill. You become so good that they can't ignore you. Which kind of relates to another lesson. I would say, don't underestimate the power of habits. That's a big thing that I've learned. Implementing a morning routine, which I picked up from the Rituals course, was one of the best things that I've ever done. And when it comes to achieving the state that you want, if you want to get in shape and run a half marathon like I did last May, or even if you just want to read more or whatever, the way to accomplish your goal is not to say, I want to do this big thing by this date, and then hopefully you do it. The way to get there is to create a habit and do something small every single day. So don't underestimate the power of those habits. Another thing would be to learn to focus. We did, or one of the things that I'm most proud of on the blog was the focus challenge that we did. That was one of my favorite things to write. It was a 5-day series of blog posts that helped people to focus on one thing and to take action on it. And that, I think, is a really critical skill for everybody to learn. A couple practical things that you can do right now is you can remove social media and email from your phone. I've actually done that now, and it's amazing. It's great. And then kind of related to that, adjust expectations around email. When we were creating Escape Your Email, when we were talking to customers, the common theme I kept hearing, and I totally empathize with the people who are in this situation, was, well, that sounds great. I'd love to turn off my notifications. I'd love to just check email once a day. My boss won't let me, or so-and-so won't let me. And it does take a while to adjust those expectations around email. I'm just at the point now where if somebody wants something from me, I tell them, don't email me because I suck at email. And I personally don't think I suck at email. I just have put boundaries around it. But in some people's responses, or some people's eyes, if you don't respond right away, then you're quote unquote bad at email. So I just go along with that. And you know, you're not going to be able to get to the point where you're not checking your inbox all the time immediately, but you can do small things to adjust the expectations around email. And that provides exponential returns. If you can get out of your inbox for another 10, 20, 30 minutes a day, and you do that every day, you know, think how much more actual work you can get done.
Yeah, we were just talking about it earlier today, how much time email takes up, and it's something that people don't even know or even aware of how much time it takes up. So it's yep. kind of funny hearing you say, oh, actually, you know what? I suck at email. So if you want to reach out to me, probably not the best thing to do. You should just call me or text me. I should totally steal that from you. I like that idea.
Right. Yeah.
So Mike, we're really sad that you'll be leaving the team, but we're also excited for you for what's coming up next. Would you mind sharing with us and everybody listening today what you're up to and where people should go next to you, kind of follow you around?
Yeah, definitely. Well, we mentioned the book at the beginning, Thou Shalt Hustle, which was a biblical approach to productivity. I've kind of had in the back of my head for the last couple of years to create this video course called Faith-Based Productivity. So I'm working on that right now. I've got the video shot, just need to edit them. If you go to faithbasedproductivity.com, I'm going to have a pre-sale up by the time that this goes live. So if you want to save some money and that sounds like something that you're interested in, definitely go to that site. The tagline there is connect to your calling, discover your destiny, live the life that you were created for. The couple other things, if you like hearing my voice on a podcast, I do Free Agents with David Sparks, which is about being an independent worker in a digital age. And then I do Bookworm with my buddy Joe Bulig, which is kind of like our podcast book club. Every couple of weeks, we read a book and hop on the mic and talk about it, hold each other accountable to our action items, things like that. And then links to everything else that I'm involved with, you can find at mikeschmitz.me. And I just want to say, you know, thank you for the opportunity. Thank you for the last several years working with Asian Efficiency. I've learned a ton. I'm really grateful for the things that I've learned, the experience that I've gotten, and for taking a chance on this guy from the internet that you'd never met before.
Yeah, man. I'm super happy that you were part of the Asian Efficiency journey and that you impacted so many people's lives, whether it was the podcast, the courses, people internally on the team. You've drastically changed people's lives over the years. And I think everybody's super grateful for everything that you've brought into the world. So we're sad to see you go, but also excited for you to see what's coming up next for you. And again, we'll have links to all of the projects that Mike is working on that he's part of. We'll make sure to link to it in the show notes as well. So thank you, Mike, for being on today. And we're going to miss you.
Yeah, I'm going to miss you guys too. Best of luck in the future, and I will still be following the podcast Asian Efficiency with great interest.
At Asian Efficiency, we believe that you shouldn't have to sacrifice your personal life to get things done. You should be able to get it all done in the time you have. That's why we've built a productivity quiz to help you maximize the time you have, to increase your energy, and to get you more focused. We've helped over 13,000 people increase their productivity, and within 2 minutes of taking the productivity quiz, we'll show you exactly what you need to do next to increase your productivity. To take the quiz, just go to theproductivityshow.com/quiz. Again, the URL is theproductivityshow.com/quiz. Don't let your never-ending to-do list drag you down and stop sacrificing your personal life to get things done. Take the quiz today and you'll be on your way to becoming superhuman productive. You can find links to everything we discussed today in the show notes by going to theproductivityshow.com/224. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider leaving us an iTunes review or a star in Overcast. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next Productive Monday.